Kanyajiang, meaning the place of the daughter of the cows, is a small village in western Kenya with no electricity or running water. It can only be reached by a red dirt road and may strike you as a highly unlikely tourist destination, and yet it's become quite famous. It's where the father of our president grew up, the man whom Boston Globe reporter Sally H. Jacobs calls the other Barack. Her new book, subtitled The Bold and Reckless Life of President Obama's Father, is a biography of this deeply controversial and enigmatic man who, despite his promising beginnings, ended up in tragic circumstances. It's published by Public Affairs, and I'm very pleased that it has brought Sally Jacobs to our show today. Hello.
Hello.
Some of the stories that are circulating about Barack Obama Sr., or should we say Barack, because that's one of the things I learned from your book.
Yes, certainly. The emphasis was on the first syllable, not the last, Barack.
So I could call him Barack and call the president Barack?
That's the way it goes.
Anyway, some of the stories that are circulating about him are wild and may have more to do with partisan politics than with real facts. Why, over 2 years into this presidency, is so little publicly known about the president's father?
Well, because it takes some doing to get it, really. You know, it required traveling to Africa quite a few times. There's not much information about him here in the United States, so it took a lot of digging and travel to get that.
And you did all of that?
I did.
You have, during the presidential campaign, you wrote an article about his father in the Boston Globe, and you vowed that if Barack Obama became president, you would write his father's biography. So it's taken you 2 years plus to get all of the information?
Well, it took about a year and change to get the information, and then it took the writing. I did write the news story, the profile of Obama Sr. before he became the president, and he seemed such an intriguing figure about which so little was known. If Barack Obama was going to be president, it seemed such an obvious story to pursue.
What parts of the story did you feel were missing?
I think the essence of the man was missing. I think really also the information about what he did, where he did it, when and how. A lot of just basic biographical information about him wasn't known.
4 out of 5 of his living children have written memoirs about their father, and the fifth says he's going to do one as well. Why are they incomplete portraits of the man?
Barack Obama Sr.'s life was a very fractured one. It was lived in pieces. Many people didn't know each other, even within the family. At the time that he died, a lawsuit erupted, raising the question of who was the last standing heir, who was the last standing wife. It was a real reflection of how chaotic this life was. As a consequence, many of his own children really knew bits and pieces of him. The president quotes his sister in his book as saying, "We all didn't really know him that well."
And the president disavowed all claims to his father's estate before he ran for Senate.
Disavowed any claim to his estate, yes.
Now, Barack Obama had children with 4 different wives. He was largely absent in all of his children's lives. Do the stories that the children tell suggest that he might have been a different father to each of them?
Well, I don't know if he was a different father to each of them. He certainly was a neglectful father to them, and in some cases a somewhat abusive father. One of his sons, Mark Nasanjo, has written a memoir, a fictional memoir, as he describes it, about living with his father and how the children in the house in Nairobi would be anxious about when their father was going to come home. And as the afternoon wore on, the anxiety level would rise as they were wondering, would he come home drunk? Would he come home and beat somebody in the household? You know, it made for a rather dark childhood. Auma, his one daughter, has written her memoir also in German, and she tells a heartbreaking story of how when she was at her high school, her private high school, periodically the headmistress would come to a handful of girls and say, "The bill is unpaid. You need to go home and get the money." And Auma, like these other girls, would walk home and tell her father that, and he'd say, "Oh, no problem. I'll get the money." And shortly afterwards, she'd be walking back to school with a check in her hand, knowing full well that the check was no good. You know, that kind of experience was very painful.
He could not have come from a more foreign place. What were your first impressions of Luoland, the tribal land where the Obamas originate from?
I had never been to Africa before. This was all very new to me. Luoland is very beautiful on the around Lake Victoria. There's just great sweeping plains down to the shore. There's beautiful roads into the trees with just a really lovely environment there. It's also a very hard environment. It's a land of real want.
And I'm sure that many of the people in the area are very proud that one of their own is president of the United States. But you also write they were extremely unhappy when the president's mother-in-law came to live in the White House because it went against Luo custom.
Right. The mother-in-law was not supposed to live in the child's house, and so they were worried that something bad would come to them.
On the other hand, I don't think they have much say in the matter, do they?
No, but, you know, this is Luo land, and it's a land rich with tradition and tribal ways, and this was one of the things that they reflect on.
You start your story with the arrival of the Ugandan Railroad into Kenya during the British colonial period. Why begin there?
Because that, in many ways, is where the story begins. The story of Obama Sr. is both a story of a place, Luo land and his experience, but also a political experience. The British came and changed Africa radically, and that would define the background of both his childhood and also when he was a young man and the British began to leave. That experience, the end of colonialism, defined very much what his own life would be like as an adult.
And his father's life.
And his father.
Onyango Obama?
Yes, Hussein Onyango.
He disappeared as a teenager and came back sometime later in British clothing. Was that typical?
Very untypical. He himself was a very untypical man. He left and went to Nairobi because he was interested in the British and what they might have brought with him. He worked for the white man. He learned a great deal about their ways, their style of dress, particularly their hygiene. He came back a man obsessed with hygiene, obsessed with hand washing, with manners, and certainly with high expectations for his son.
But you also noticed in looking at his ID papers, which you gained access to, that he was missing six teeth?
Yes, I gained access very easily because it's in the president's book. He writes out the description of that card. It was a tradition in Luo land at the time that a young man on reaching age of about 13 would have his bottom six teeth removed. And there's still today, there are many men with those teeth missing.
Why?
It was a ritual that marked that period.
But his son, Baraka, I guess when he was born, didn't go through that. He didn't have his teeth missing.
Was of an age that they had stopped practicing that ritual.
He also wasn't a Muslim like his father.
Well, he certainly was raised a Muslim. His name is Baraka, as you say, and that was what he was born, as were all the children. The reason he was not a practicing Muslim was a very practical one, and that was the Christian schools that he went to. You needed to leave your faith at the door if you were not a Christian, and he had no problem in doing that. He was not a particularly spiritual man in any case.
And he dropped the A from his name.
Yes, he did.
The Baraka, meaning blessing.
Right.
My guest is Sally H. Jacobs. Her book, The Other Barak, The Bold and Reckless Life of President Obama's Father. It's published by Public Affairs. And the family then moved from its original town over a disagreement about a soccer trophy?
Yes. Onyango Hussein had a soccer trophy of which he was very proud. The local representative of the British who was there, Pomboya, who basically collected the taxes and was the representative of the British there, wanted that trophy himself for a local contest. And Onyango Hussein didn't get along with Pomboya, wouldn't give it up. And the two had a big fight about it. Pomboya called him an unforgettable word, which is a jadak, which means a foreigner. That was quite an insult to Onyango Hussein, and he was so miffed that he took off, went across the lake, and settled his family in Kogelo.
And what was his wife's role in this story?
Well, he had several wives. At the time, he took his wife, Hawa Auma, with him. She was not particularly happy to be there, but she did stay there, and they built a home. Which is the Obama home to this day.
There was also a time where she had to leave him because he almost slit her throat.
Hussein Onyango was a very a violent man in many ways. He had a famous bull whip, a hippopotamus whip that he would lash people with, and he was very tough on his wife. At one point, I'm told by both his daughter and some neighbors, he went out so furious at her and dug her grave out behind their house, and he's about to slit her throat and kill her when neighbors, of course, seeing this, object, and she did leave the home, ran away.
And then Barack Sr. almost did the same thing with one of his wives.
Well, I don't know if he went as far as cutting her throat, but he was certainly abusive to her and did beat her at times.
He was extremely bright, but he ended up getting kicked out of some of Kenya's most prominent schools.
He was kicked out. Well, He was not invited to return to the prominent Maseno school because he was so argumentative. He always differed and ultimately may have been the one who authored a letter sent to the principal. It was highly critical of the school, and the principal was tired of all this and said he was not welcome back.
How did he wind up leaving Kenya? Well, first there would he had a first wife, didn't he?
He did have a first wife. She claims to be the last standing wife herself. Her name is Grace Kazia, and she lives outside of London to this day.
He had a reputation for being a womanizer. Was he doing that from the start?
You know, that's a very Western term, reputation as a womanizer. It's important to understand about Obama Sr. that he is a member of the Luo ethnic group. This is a tribe ethnic group that is polygamous. People have many wives. It's a very normal thing. So while people here find that unsettling, it was a perfectly normal thing for him to do.
But he was a serial marrier rather than a typical polygamist, although there was bigamy involved, wasn't there, at some point? Because wasn't he already married when he married the president's mother?
That depends on who you ask the question of. Yes, one answer is he was married through a village ceremony to Grace Kazia. Did that village ceremony have standing in the United States? I think a judge would probably say no. In the Luo culture, the answer would be yes. But in the Luo culture, he was able to marry again.
How did he wind up going to college?
He was very lucky. And when he was in Nairobi, he didn't have the proper credentials because of his ouster from the Maseno school to get into a higher degree. He met a woman named Betty Mooney who helped him get the credentials he needed, and she herself paid for his first year at the University of Hawaii.
And why Hawaii?
He was drawn to that. They happened to find a magazine piece in the Saturday Post which described the beautiful multicultural islands, and it just seemed to be the right place for him.
And then he met Stanley Ann Dunham in a Russian class, of all things.
Russian was very popular at the time. They had just expanded the number of Russian classes to two, and they did meet in that class in the fall of 1960.
She was pregnant when they decided to get married. Neither of their parents were happy about it.
Right. Both sides of the family were not particularly happy, and they took off and married on an island outside of Honolulu.
And they were unhappy because...
Hussein Onyango was unhappy because he didn't think his son should marry a white woman. He thought she would have different ways and different expectations, and he did not want a white woman's blood to sully the family. Stanley Ann's parents were concerned because, you know, intermarriage was still a very unusual thing here. In 22 states, it was illegal.
Did he inform her about the wife and two children back home in Kenya?
To the best we can tell, he did tell her he had been married. He did not tell her that he had the children. What he said to her and her parents was that in Kenya at the time, you could simply declare to your wife, I am not married to you anymore. The truth is it was more complicated than that. You had to go through a certain Luo ritual involving a council of elders, and I don't think he ever did that.
There were recent news reports that he seriously considered giving young Barack up for adoption.
Well, he did say that his wife was considering giving the boy up for adoption. Now, did they actually do that? It's unclear. Obama at the time was up for visa renewal, and if immigration officials chose to see him as a bigamist with a mixed-race baby, that might not have been the best profile.
He finished college in 3 years, graduated Phi Beta Kappa, and then earned a place at Harvard. So this is a pretty good student.
Obama was brilliant.
But then when he went to Cambridge, did that prompt the divorce?
No, the divorce didn't happen until later. Obama went to Cambridge and did extraordinarily well. He not only passed all his exams, he had started on his dissertation. But immigration officials and Harvard administrators got wind of the fact that he might have multiple marriages and were not happy.
So he was forced to leave.
He was.
His dream had been to become an economist in the new Kenyan government. But after he retired to Kenya, he worked for an oil company, then a bank.
These were very good jobs, by the way. Working for Shell at the time was an exceptional job. He then got a job at the central bank, which he was asked to leave.
Although he didn't get that PhD, he did insist on being called Dr. Obama.
And the older he got, the more he asked to be called that.
Why was that?
It was a title of huge standing. Obama had a rather loose relationship with the truth, and he felt he had earned that degree and should be called it.
He died in a car crash in 1982, and that wasn't the first traffic accident he'd been involved in.
No, he was an extremely heavy drinker, and he did have multiple car accidents throughout his life.
He has been as controversial in his death as he was in his life. Isn't there a lawsuit still pending about his estate?
No, that lawsuit was resolved.
Uh-huh. And how was it resolved?
There was a settlement. It was the money was awarded to two family members, and the thing ended.
In Dreams from My Father, Barack Obama Jr. remembers the one and only time he and his father were together. When was that?
That was in December of 1971, and Barack Obama Sr.'s life was in shambles. He'd lost his job, his third wife was leaving him, and he went back to Honolulu to visit.
And there was this whole matter about seeing how the Grinch stole Christmas.
Right, and Obama Sr. felt that his son had seen enough television for that day and ordered him to go do his homework.
He was just 10 years old.
Exactly.
And that was in 1971. In the interim, he's kind of distanced himself from his father.
Junior has?
Yes. Even though it's interesting that his mother was so important in his life, mm-hmm. his memoir is about his roots and his father. You don't get the feeling that he talks much about his father because of the checkered
career.
You
mean now or back then? Now?
Yes.
He doesn't talk a great deal about him. He devoted a lot of energy and time to learning about his father and made his own peace, I presume.
Sally H. Jacobs' book, The Other Barack, The Bold and Reckless Life of President Obama's Father, is published by Public Affairs. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.